and welcome to this week's Liverpool Lives podcast. I'm Ruby Molyneux and I will be discussing the main news stories from Liverpool, as well as a roundup of your sports headlines and what's happening in the city this week. Coming up in this week's show, we'll be finding out why a certain councillor is angry.
I'm appalled by the way that some of our staff are being treated.
We will also look at what's in store for fire stations across Merseyside and the effects of the cuts.
Whatever happens, we're going to have to lose the posts because our budget's being cut. So whatever happens, those jobs are going.
And whether a new campaign introduced by Say No to Drunks is helping to make the city safer.
Yeah, the idea is to encourage extra door control to address the issue when people are, you know, front-loading and pre-loading before they go out.
But first, Britain's war in Afghanistan is officially over as UK forces leave the country. Merseyside is remembering the fallen soldiers as the 13-year campaign comes to an end. In its ceremony at Camp Bastion, the Union flag was lowered for the last time, marking the formal handover of power to Afghan forces. Many servicemen from Merseyside and its surrounding areas were among the 453 British Forces personnel and Ministry of Defence civilians that have died since serving in 2001. The Union Jack was lowered at Camp Bastion on the same day as US base Camp Leatherneck also handed over control. Reporter Hannah Kane took to the streets of Liverpool to see what the public thought about the troops coming out of Afghanistan.
Because they were fighting an identifiable enemy. They should have left in about 2003.
It wasn't justified when they went out there, but when they were out there, we just back them up because they're there then. But now they're back out, I'm over them all.
I think because the state of Afghanistan, once the soldiers pull out after 13 years of war, it will revert back to the way it was. There were thousands of years of culture, and we can't overturn that or change it.
Do feel that we've lost an awful lot of soldiers.
We need to concentrate on those problems here at home and stretch our influence where it's not for us to.
And you can't put a price on life as a whole, really. Be anything but it said that what £37 billion been spent. If you justify that as the loss of nearly 500 lives across 13 years, that it is, it's the price that you put on life. But then they've sacrificed their lives for the safety of us.
Liverpool Council has apologised to staff after an email meant for trade union leaders was sent to more than 50 employers. Luke Holliday has more on the story.
Several staff at the council were left in tears when city bosses accidentally emailed them detailed plans that will put some of them at risk of redundancy. The council has apologised for the blunder, but opposition leaders said it was appalling that workers should be treated so casually. Councillor Richard Kemp, leader of the Liberal Democrats in Liverpool, told us he believes that information concerning redundancies should be given in person and that he feels the staff at Liverpool Council have been let down.
I'm appalled by the way that some of our staff are being treated. For 50 people to get an email telling them that they were going to probably be made redundant is a disgrace, particularly when, in the event, only 15 of them were made redundant. When you're giving people bad news like this, the council should always ensure that it's done face-to-face in as sympathetic a way as possible.
Some of the staff have been working at the council since they left school, but with 1,600 jobs having been shed from 2010, unions feel the situation is close to breaking point. As a community services department looks to save £156 million over the next 3 years due to cuts from central government funding, compulsory redundancies will have to be made in the council. Councillor Richard Kemp said that although the staff already understood that there would be job cuts, the way in which the council has gone about this is not acceptable.
Well, everyone knows that that is the case. And in a way, that isn't the point. All the staff in the council have been part of a process which they know could lead to redundancies. They're having to apply for their jobs, so they always knew that something was happening and they'd been part of it. But the end result to be just an email, albeit inadvertently said, which shows that their specific job is at risk, is of course very different than being part of a general discussion about everyone's jobs.
Clearly this email mess-up will have increased anxiety in the staff, and the only way in which this can be cleared up is through the council announcing which staff will be made redundant.
That was Luke Holliday speaking to Councillor Richard Kemp.
For more on all the latest news, sport, entertainment, views and reviews, bookmark jmu-journalism.org.uk.
Fire chiefs are expected to hold an extra public meeting in Grigsby after a huge crowd was shut out of the consultation. Merseyside Fire and Rescue Authority is proposing to merge two rural fire stations as they face cuts in their budget. The plans could lead to the closure of fire stations in West Kirby and Upton and a £2.8 million replacement base constructed in Grigsby to serve both areas. 22 jobs will be axed. If the plans go ahead, the average response time from Grigsby to an incident would be increased. Dan Stevens, Chief Fire Officer at Merseyside Fire and Rescue Service, talks about how the cuts will affect the response time.
It is right to say that in closing the two stations and building a new station at Grigsby would result in an increase in response times. The average response time on West Kirby's area now is 5 minutes and 24 seconds, which is that's actually the Merseyside average response time. The average response time on the Upton station area is 4 minutes and 43 seconds. So if we were to close both stations and build a new station at Grigsby, what we believe the average response would be, and using our software, the modelling software that we have, it's about 98-99% accurate. We believe that the average response time across both of the combined station areas would increase to 6 minutes and 18 seconds.
Liverpool's Anglican Cathedral has received £275,000 from the First World War Centenary Cathedral Repair Fund. The money will pay for vital repairs to the Lady Chapel and nave roofs at the Grade 1 listed building, which is one of the world's largest cathedrals. Beth and Tolly spoke to Stuart Hayes, Director of Communications at the cathedral.
I mean, it's fantastic news for the cathedral. As you can imagine, we're, as a Grade 1 listed building, we have a lot of expenditure on maintaining this beautiful building, and any help that we can get is more than gratefully received.
And what will the money be spent on?
This money is earmarked for two roofing projects. So there's damage to the roof of the nave, the main part of the cathedral, and the Lady Chapel, which is the oldest part of the cathedral. As you can imagine, being up here on the hill, being a big building, we're quite exposed to the elements, and so the roofs, the copper roofs take a bit of damage, and so this money will be sort of patching this up, making it good, and essentially making sure that water can't seep through the cracks and into the building and then causing even more damage. So it's vitally important stuff.
And what are you hoping this will do for the future of the cathedral?
Well, we've got, as present sort of custodians of this building, we've got to make sure that we pass it on to future generations. We recognise, you know, Liverpool Cathedral was built by the generosity of the people of Merseyside, and we need to make sure that it stays as a magnificent icon and a building that people want to use. More and more people are coming and using us for events, for visits, for concerts, and we've got to maintain that.
Partygoers on a night out in Liverpool could be turned away from bars and clubs as bouncers started to breath test customers for alcohol in a new initiative aimed at making the city safer. The initiative was launched this weekend with over 15 bars and clubs signing up to the pilot scheme as part of a campaign called Say No to Drunks. Gary Bascott from the Alcohol and Tobacco Unit at Liverpool Council told us more about the scheme.
Yeah, the idea is to encourage extra door control to address the issue of people who are, you know, front-loading and pre-loading before they go out. So anything that helps the SIA staff, the door staff, to make an initial intervention, we think will help to control that. There's a lot of work to be done in this area, so that it could be argued this is a start in it. You know, initially, this is just looking primarily at the doors. We do training inside the licensed premises to identify and support the people inside the bar to actually control that. if you go in the nighttime economy, you know exactly what I'm talking about. There's people that's what we're looking at. We're looking at people who may be a little bit over the limit. It's the real top end people who are causing the problem, becoming victims of violence, committing violence themselves in ASB within the nighttime economy. So it's the real top end ones, hopefully, to just calm, to start calming that down. And this is just the first, and it's conjoined with a whole lot of other measures that council partners with police and City Safe partners will be doing over the next months and years.
Our reporter Johnny Coop went out onto the streets to see if people thought the campaign would make the city centre safer.
I think it is a good idea, because obviously if you're too drunk you shouldn't really be like carrying on drinking. At the same time, I've got a bit of a problem with it, because obviously, like he said, if you get stopped going in and someone else has drank well more than you.
I think it's a bad idea, because if I'm not drunk already going in, then you're going to get drunk inside, so then you're still over the limit.
No, I don't think so. No, I think it's a good idea, because it will stop them drinking too much and then driving home, won't it? So.
It's quite invasive. You're out having a good time. You know everyone has their own limit, so you might be able to drink more than me, but just because you have doesn't mean you should get in and I shouldn't.
Personally, I think it's a bad idea, because if people like the clubs enough to still want to go, they'll turn away from drinking, potentially start doing more drugs. And it could also run the place out of business, where they'll just go to ones where, because if they can't drink, they'll look for alternatives such as drugs, and they might just not go at all.
I think it is a good idea, but to be honest, if you're going to breathalyse someone before they go into a pub and they realise that they're not going to get into any pubs to be able to drink, that's not going to make them be like, oh, right, I'll go home then. That's just going to make them go into a shop and buy a drink and drink it somewhere else. I think in a pub it's quite an intimate environment. They're able to actually more control what's going on, if you know what I'm saying.
I've got no idea what the answer is, but it'll help. If they're already tanked up before they go in there, they might get refused in, so they won't have any more drink.
For more on all the latest news, sport, entertainment, views and reviews, follow us on Twitter at JMU Journalism and come back often.
A disabled mother from Liverpool has lost an appeal of more than £1,000 in bedroom tax payments. She was told she must pay the charge of a small room measuring just 57 square feet in size, even though she was advised by Liverpool Council's ruling that any room smaller than 71 square feet cannot legally be considered to be a bedroom. Reporter Sinead Monroe talks to the Council for North West, Natalie Nicholas.
The unfortunate thing is, whereas, you know, the City Council would have said that this whole bedroom tax is being imposed by all local authorities from the government. So whereas we, a few years ago, there was nothing about bedroom tax. We never knew about it until it was implemented by this government. And it's very unfortunate, because there's some very vulnerable people who are being hit by this bedroom tax, and it's unfair.
Do you think it's fair that other people should be paying it as well?
Everyone is unique, everyone's circumstances is different. So, you know, it's very unfair what the government is doing. And it does not take into consideration that people have different social, economic and mental health problems that will predispose them to have additional room.
Liverpool has seen a rise in financial services job vacancies over the past 2 years. Northern cities have seen the biggest increase in financial service jobs as companies are moving their jobs from London and the South East to the North in order to cut costs. John Hall, Chief Executive of Professional Liverpool, recently promoted Merseyside as an ideal destination for business.
We have the proven skill set here already. We have four city region universities, so there is a regular sort of feeder line of graduates. We have established businesses. The workforce tend to be slightly older and more determined to make a career, so there is a much lower attrition rate in the Liverpool area. And obviously, there are massive side effects in terms of economies, because it's quite clearly a lot cheaper to employ staff here, and the more senior the staff, the greater the saving. And also rents compared with, say, London and the South East are considerably cheaper, so there is a huge benefit going straight to the bottom line profits of businesses. So I think there are compelling reasons. I think also, not a specific business reason, but the quality of life we have here, I think, is pretty high in terms of culture. With if you put that package all together, it's a compelling case.
Hey homeless people in Liverpool are being offered free flu jabs this winter. The Basement Advisory Centre, which is on Parr Street in the city centre, are offering the flu jab free of charge for people who are more likely to develop a serious illness from flu like pneumonia. Beth and Tolly spoke to David Slack from the Basement charity.
The homeless suffer with some of the worst health in the country, and we know from experience that things that would be, you know, simple mild annoyance to us can quite often develop into bronchitis, pneumonia, and end up with them being hospitalised for lengthy periods of time. As always, prevention is better than cure.
And are the free vaccinations only for the homeless?
They are. We run an evening drop-in Monday to Friday that's for rough sleepers only, so it's those that are sleeping out of doors, and they're definitely at more risk than you know, the general population of picking up.
And when and where will the vaccinations be available to the homeless people?
We have a clinic twice a week that's for rough sleepers only. Well, rough sleepers and those in hostels as well. And that's from Tuesday and Thursdays from 5 o'clock till 8 o'clock.
For more on all the latest news, sport, entertainment, views and reviews, bookmark jmu-journalism.org.uk.
And now for our weekly roundup of sports news. Here's Ben Matthews.
It's been an important week for local clubs as they found out who they will face in the first round of the FA Cup. Tranmere will face Bristol Rovers at home, whilst non-league Chester will travel to Southend. Meanwhile, Southport face Londoners Dagenham and Redbridge. Undoubtedly, the tie of the round is the small club of Warrington Town, who will face Exeter City at Cantilever Park in Warrington. Chairman of the town, Toby McCormack, says he's looking forward to facing the Football League club.
The draw itself of just bringing a Football League club to Warrington, the town itself, and to the club is the big achievement and the big draw of the round for us. You look at some of the teams and the ties in the other draws. As far as giant killing acts go, it would be a proper giant killing fixture. Obviously, they're full time. Our guys have got their own jobs, and there's 100 places between us in the league pyramid. So it's a proper David and Goliath Cup tie.
Elsewhere in sport, tributes have been pouring in for the goalkeeper of the South African football team who was shot and killed. Senzo Maiwa was murdered whilst at his girlfriend's house in Johannesburg at the age of 27. FIFA president Sepp Blatter described the act as senseless and says it's a tragic loss, whilst former South African teammate and Everton winger Steven Pienaar said the team has lost a very talented goalkeeper who was well liked by teammates and opponents alike.
In other news, Liverpool made it through to the next round of the Capital One Cup, beating Swansea 2-1. I spoke to Ben about the game. So, what did you make of the game?
Well, I felt Liverpool were still not quite at their best. They looked increasingly nervous as the game went on. I felt they were a little lucky to get the goals they needed so late on. It was a performance where they dominated possession but failed to find that spark, that incisive pass at the key moment. Swansea took their goal well, and if it had not been for that late sending off, they might not have lost this game. But manager Brendan Rodgers will be pleased that he got one over his former club, and his big summer gamble in Balotelli got his side back into the game. He'll also be pleased that Dejan Lovren got on the score sheet too, because he's struggled since his move from Southampton.
What are your thoughts on Mario Balotelli? Because he's received a lot of criticism since his move.
After coming on in the second half against the Swans, I could imagine a lot of Liverpool fans feeling a bit nervous about what to expect from him. He's not shown the sort of performances that have filled people with confidence, and his goal-scoring record is not exactly great either, only scoring the once since his move from Italy. But his movement for the goal was good, and his finish was tidy too. We spoke last week on the podcast about his performances, and hopefully for Liverpool fans' sake, this is the start of a good run of form for him. He's not quite settled in yet, and scoring last night should give him some confidence.
What do you think is next for the Reds after this performance?
Well, their next game is against Newcastle, and hopefully this late comeback will do wonders for morale and give them the boost they need. It's not been the Liverpool of last season. They've missed Daniel Sturridge with injury and desperately need someone to lead the line, like Luis Suarez did so well last year. With Balotelli getting his first domestic goal, hopefully he continued to show the talent that we know he can do.
That was Ben Matthews with a roundup of this week's sports news. It's Halloween this week, and there are plenty of spooky events planned around the city. There will be a theatre production of the Gothic classic Frankenstein by Mary Shelley at St Luke's Bomdock Church. Tickets are £10 and the show will run for two nights only on the 31st of October and the 1st of November. I spoke to Amber Rose Reynolds from the Bombed Out Church about Halloween in the city.
I
think that the Halloween show is more for local people. I think that the Lantern Company and the things that they've been doing in Sefton Park last 10-11 years is a good precedent to set. Where, you know, there's jolly things to do when it gets dark. In terms of the production of Frankenstein, I think that's more for people that live in Liverpool or in the surrounding areas.
The Liverpool Lantern Parade will take place in Sefton Park on the 1st of November. Other events in the city include a haunted sleepover in the cells of St George's Hall and ghost haunts at Liverpool Town Hall, which will be raising money for Clare House. Now, do you fancy a trip to hell? From the 29th of October to the 1st of November, St George's Hall will be hosting A Journey to Hell, led by the Grim Reaper. This is an adults-only event and tickets cost £20. This experience is not for the faint-hearted, so be warned. Another way you can see the city on Halloween is to take the Shiverpool bus tour. The infamous tour takes you on a theatrical journey of thrills and spills around the city. There are many other nighttime events in the city, as it is one of the biggest nights out in town. It has been very mild in Liverpool this week, and the Met Office have reported we are in for a freakishly hot Halloween with temperatures reaching 18 degrees. Here at Liverpool Lifes, we wish you all a very happy Halloween. That's all for Liverpool Life podcast this week. Thank you to our Liverpool Lifes editor, Jake Cottrell. I'm Ruby Molyneux. Thank you very much for listening.
This has been the Liverpool Life, Liverpool Lives podcast. Brought to you by the journalism students at the Redmond's News Centre. More next week.